Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, the Alien Tort Statute and Corporate Liability Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 24th, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Jessner v. Arab Bank, a case considering whether corporations may be sued under the Alien Tort Statute. Between 2004 and 2010, survivors of several terrorist attacks in the Middle East or family members or estate representatives of the victims filed lawsuits in federal district court in New York against Arab Bank, an international bank headquartered in Jordan. Plaintiffs alleged that Arab Bank had financed and facilitated the attacks in question, and they sought redress under, among other things, the Alien Tort Statute. The district court ultimately dismissed those Alien Tort Statute claims, based on the 2010 decision of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in Kuobel v. Royal Dutch Petroleum, known as Kuobel 1, which concluded that Alien Tort Statute claims could not be brought against corporations because the law of nations did not recognize corporate liability. The U.S. Supreme Court later affirmed the judgment in Kuobel, Kuobel 2, but on a different basis, the presumption against extraterritorial application of statutes. In Jessner, the Second Circuit, invoking its precedent in Kuobel 1 and finding nothing to the contrary in the Supreme Court's Kuobel 2 decision, affirmed the district court's dismissal of plaintiffs' Alien Tort Statute claims on the grounds that the Alien Tort Statute does not apply to alleged international law violations by a corporation. This sharpened a split among the circuit courts of appeals on the issue, and the Supreme Court granted certiorari to resolve the dispute. By a vote of 5-4, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Second Circuit. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court held that foreign corporations may not be defendants in suits brought under the Alien Tort Statute. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court with respect to Parts 1, 2B1, and 2C, joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, and an opinion with respect to Parts 2A, 2B2, 2B3, and Part 3, joined by the Chief Justice and Justice Thomas. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. Justices Alito and Gorsuch also filed opinions concurring in part and concurring in judgment. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kagan. And now, to discuss the case, we have Eugene Kontorovich, professor of law at Northwestern School of Law.
In Jessner v. Arab Bank, the Supreme Court decided by a 5-4 majority, the Alien Tort Statute does not allow plaintiffs to sue corporations for violations of international law. So what does that mean, and how did this case arise? The Alien Tort Statute is one of the oldest laws on the books. It was passed by the first Congress as a sentence in the first Judiciary Act, the act organizing the federal courts. And it says that the federal courts shall have jurisdiction of suits in tort only by an alien alleging violations of the law of nations. So it's a statute that gives district courts jurisdiction over lawsuits claiming violations of the law of nations that are brought by aliens. What's that mean? Nobody really knew for the first 200 years of the nation's history, because the law was really never used or relied on until the late 70s, when it was basically discovered and dusted off by human rights lawyers who began bringing lawsuits for plaintiffs, alleging violations of international law over things that happened abroad. So, for example, in the landmark 1980 case of Tavardiga, involved Paraguayan suing other Paraguayans for torture in Paraguay. Now, and what allowed them to bring this lawsuit in the United States was their understanding was the language of the statute, which said that federal courts will have jurisdiction over international lawsuits, suits alleging violations of international law, by aliens. That led to a big wave of human rights litigation. And the Florida case was one kind of example in which the defendants would be low-level government officials and foreign funders. But very quickly, the litigation began to target multinational corporations who were maybe indirectly complicit in alleged international law violations. Multinational corporations being attractive, of course, because they could deliver much bigger judgments. Now, the Supreme Court began to review lower court decisions about this obscure and previously unheard of law and began to narrow it in a series of cases. So what the first question that the court considered in a case decided over a decade ago called Sosa was, where are the legal rules come from these cases? Because the statute only speaks of jurisdiction to hear suits under international law, but it does not actually seem to create any international law causes of action. And the court ruled that the statute authorizes federal courts to create in a common law fashion customary international law causes of action, but they must do so carefully and in a limited way and only where international law is really, really, really clear. So that, you know, international law is quite vague often, and lots of people describe international law violations quite broadly, but only when there's a totally well-decided upon international law norm can a court act. Subsequent to that, in another case called Corbel, the court also ruled that the statute does not authorize extraterritorial suits. That is to say, suits for conduct that occurs entirely abroad with no American connection. Now, the final limitation on alien torts claims, which now combined with the other limits, seems to create very high barriers to using the alien tort statute as a vehicle for human rights litigation, addresses the issue of corporate liability. So corporations have been attractive defendants in these cases. Why shouldn't they be able to be sued under the Alien Tort Statute? Because, again, the Alien Tort Statute authorizes federal courts to create common law causes of action based on international law norms. And in international law, it is far from clear that corporations can violate international law, or that corporations are directly subject to international law norms. Now, this is because, while in the United States there is clearly a notion of corporate crime, many countries and most legal systems do not have a notion of corporate crime. People commit crimes, not companies. So people can commit genocide, governments can commit genocide, but corporations are not directly acting in the international law realm. Now, the question is, what's that mean for the alien tort statute? The plaintiffs in these cases argued that while it doesn't really matter whether corporations can be liable under international law, all that matters for the alien tort statute is whether the conduct alleged violates international law, rather than whether the perpetrator is would themselves be subject to international law. The Supreme Court rejected that idea and said that whether the norm speaks to and covers action by the defendant is as much a part of the norm as the actual primary conduct described. In other words, to have an alien tort statute cause of action, you need not just to be alleging conduct that clearly violates international law, but also by an actor to whom that international law clearly extends. Now, the plaintiffs in these cases also argue, based on a variety of non-binding UN instruments, that international law does, in fact, apply. The Supreme Court disagreed with that and found that the evidence was inadequate to show that, because there have actually not been any international law cases finding corporations liable. And while there have been many statements, non-binding statements by General Assembly and other UN bodies, the court said, well, that's not enough for the alien tort statute to create a clear rule of international law. We need to see it have been done before. Plurality opinion by Justice Kennedy also stressed that to the extent that this is an exercise in creating federal common law, the courts are creating rules themselves, they need to only do so when it is absolutely clear that they should, not when matters are unsettled, such as with corporate liability for international law violations, because, first of all, the creating common law is itself disfavored. Congress should speak clearly. And it certainly disfavored when it could have foreign policy implications, which the courts think they should largely avoid and leave matters that affect foreign relations. This case was a very good example. The lawsuit was against the Arab Bank, a Jordanian governmental bank, for allegedly holding funds that were used and helped terror groups that killed citizens in Israel. The lawsuit brought by families of terror victims threatened to strain diplomatic relations with the Kingdom of Jordan. The concurrence of Justice Gorsuch went even broader and said that to the extent that these cases involve foreign plaintiffs, which they have to because the statute speaks of lawsuits by aliens, but also foreign defendants, in other words, purely foreign parties, the federal courts simply cannot hear them as a constitutional matter because lawsuits between foreigners and foreigners do not arise in diversity jurisdictions. And he does not regard the Alien Tort Statute as actually creating a cause of action, but only creating statutory jurisdiction. And thus, it would have to satisfy the federal diversity rules. And this would be a very radical narrowing of the Alien Tort Statute. But this is more a debate about principle than practicalities, because even the rationale of the court is sufficient, combined with earlier decisions applying the presumption against extraterritoriality to alien tort statutes, which doesn't forbid purely foreign suits, but strongly presumes against them, and the Sosa case requiring that the norms litigated, the international law rules, be clearly established in international law. All of this works together to greatly limit the ability of federal judges to engage in free-form importation of international law norms into federal law, and also discourages and potentially blocks federal courts from being venues to adjudicate arguable international law violations committed overseas.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.